Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths. And my mission every week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, just people who love what they do, they're passionate about it, and they are willing and able to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice with us each week. So today I'm delighted to welcome back to the show my friend, the fulfiller of publishing dreams, Stacy Aronson, for part four of an extended conversation that we have been having about independent book publishing. In our first interview, we talked about how the self-publishing model can help or hurt your book sales. In the second, we discussed why DIY, do-it-yourself, and self-publishing are not one and the same. In part three, we delved into the different types of editing and the importance of each, how editors differ, and what to look for, and what questions you should ask yourself before interviewing professionals to determine your particular needs, concerns, wishes, and goals for your book. So please do listen to all the segments 1 through 3 so you can kind of follow along with the conversation and have access to all of the information that Stacy is sharing with us. It's an amazing interview series. I've never done a series like this. I just really felt it was that important, and she is sharing so much information. So today our conversation will be focused specifically on the questions to ask prospective editors and designers, red flags to heed, and great resources for finding book professionals. It's going to be one of those mornings. Stacy, good morning, and thank you so much for coming back for part four.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be back again.
Well, the information you have been giving, you know, I have done kind of follow-up interviews before because everybody has something important to share, and often an hour is just not enough. But you have gone so deep into the publishing, you know, self-publishing arena that I kept saying, okay, we're not done. You have to come back. We're not done. You have to come back. So it's been a great, I mean, you've just been so free to share all of your information, and I appreciate that so much, and I know our audience does as well.
Oh, well, I'm so happy to do it, and I do hope that a lot of value has gone out to the audience because it is a loaded topic, as we keep saying, and every time we have an interview and we start talking about one thing and we get more in-depth than that, which is great, we realize we didn't get to something we wanted to, and that's, it's so easy to do when you're talking about self-publishing. There's just so much to talk about. So I'm really thrilled to come back for part four of the first ever Your Partner in Success Radio Series. I feel like I want to have a little badge on my website or something special.
I know. We should create something. I mean, you've just been so gracious about giving all of this information. And like you say, it's a loaded topic, but it's just a wide, wide topic. And, you know, 1 hour, even 2 hours just did not do it justice, especially when you were just so willing to say, you know, this is what I know, this is what I've learned. Try this, don't do that. It's so important.
It is, and thank you for the kind words. And I'm, as I said, just very happy to be able to share as much as I can because, as we've said in every interview, you shared how you yourself were thinking about embarking on this self-publishing journey. You hit that brick wall, and you said, oh, my gosh, it's so overwhelming. And not only that, but because you're such a proficient professional with so many skills that you automatically think you should be able to do all of the things that would be part of book production. And, in fact, you shouldn't be skilled in all of those things because each one is an individually trained skill. And so many people put that kind of pressure on themselves. They think self-publishing means I must do everything myself, which is why we spent so much time in the second interview about why the term DIY and self-publishing are not one and the same. So I definitely recommend, as you said, listening to the prior interviews because we have talked about so many things. But But today I really wanted to be able to delve into this very important topic of how do I find the right providers? If I'm going to self-publish and it's my responsibility to hire professionals, how do I find them? What kind of questions should I be asking? What kind of red flags should I be looking for? Because I think that's probably one of the scariest parts is feeling like, oh, how am I going to trust someone I hire? And how am I supposed to even know what to ask? If I'm not that experienced in editing or design, how am I even supposed to know what to ask? So I really wanted to give away as much advice as possible, specific questions you should be asking, things you should be looking for. And I also have some really great resources for finding editors, for finding designers. And so today is going to be jam-packed full of good stuff, and I hope it will be a wonderful conclusion to the series. Not that I want it to end. I love my time with you. I get so excited.
It may not end. We're going to see how far we get with this because I don't want to just arbitrarily stop it at four. If we can get to everything, that's great. If we can't, don't worry about it. We'll carry it on because this is such an important information. And as you said, I looked at this. I'm in the beginning of writing a book, or possibly it's going to turn into a book series. And I looked at everything that you were talking about, and I just like, I sucked in breath. It was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm expert enough in my field to know that I'm not expert in your field. So it stopped me. And one of the things that stopped me was, honestly, purely monetary. Because the more I looked at, well, can I do this on my own? But what if I mess it up? Then I've wasted all that time and my billable hours. Now I have to hire somebody to, you know, clean up my mess. And the more I looked at it, the more I saw dollar signs just pinging all around the room. I went, okay, until I get some clarity on this, I'm not going to try to do this on my own. And that's where it stopped. It really just stopped cold. And that's when I started talking with you. I was like, oh, I can do this. Now I know what to do. I know who to talk to. I know how to hire. I know the things that I absolutely should not touch on my own. So this has been really beneficial to me as a budding author.
Oh, that's wonderful. I know we talk about how overwhelming it is, and I know we keep repeating it. But the fact is every author who's ever come to me has had some level of overwhelm and has been, you know, hoping to find an all-inclusive, you know, partner like me, or at least resources for other partners they could work with. And it really doesn't matter. I want to reiterate this. So if you've heard the first three shows already, I'm reiterating. If this is your first time tuning in, then this is good for you to hear. Do not think that you're supposed to do everything yourself, and do not put that kind of pressure on yourself. It's really important for you to realize that there's a lot to it, and you don't want to be wasting time and money. That's the last thing you want to be doing, because there is a substantial investment involved in producing a print book of real excellence from cover to cover, and there's really no need to produce any other book. I mean, it does the literary community absolutely no good. It actually does no one any good to produce a substandard book. So you don't want to go there. You don't want to cut a bunch of corners, end up with a book you're not proud of, and then start trying to figure out how to do it better. Because as I mentioned, I think on the first show, once you put a book up on Amazon, it's pretty much there for life. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to get rid of it. People think they could just delete it off the platform. You can't. So, you know, you don't want that substandard book up there, and then you go back and you spend the money and you do it right, and then you've got two versions of your book, a substandard one and a really stellar one. And people go on to find your book, and they wonder why you have two. And the covers are different, and the book description's different. And I'm just throwing this out there today because I've had more than one author come to me who did the substandard DIY book and realized, oh my gosh, yeah, I saved a ton of money, but I also totally ruined my credibility by doing it.
I've
gotten bad reviews. I have this terrible book on Amazon. I'm embarrassed to sell it. I mean, nobody wants to feel that way. As an author, you want to be super proud of your book. So I don't want any of your audience to try to cut corners, end up with a substandard book, and then come back and say, oh, now it's time to do it right. I want you to do it right the first time, and that's why I'm so open about giving every ounce of advice I possibly can through podcasts, through my blog, through my newsletter, through videos, through any medium I can, because I don't want to see any author standing there with a book in hand and not being completely proud of it. There's just no reason to publish any other way. So today is, as I said, is going to be chock full of advice about how to go about this process of finding the right professionals and knowing who to weed out and making sure that you're finding the right people for you. And that's why I do want to really recommend, because they really are in tandem. This show and the last show, which is part three, was about the kinds of questions you need to ask yourself first. That will really help you get a clear picture of what you need and what kind of providers are going to be best for you. So I did give a link to that blog post, a little shortened link, and I also have a link to a blog post about red flags and questions to ask providers. So I will give those out at the end, but they're also, if you happen to be live and you're on the computer, there are a couple of little ads flashing by with those links there for you. So I will give those away so you can access the written version as well.
Great. Okay, I can't wait to get into this because honestly, and I'm still going through it. I mean, I'm looking at my epic book, my epic blank page. And going,
yes.
Okay. Now I have an idea where to go. And you have no idea. Honestly, you have no idea how much this has been helpful to me because, I mean, I got to the point I thought, I am not going to write a book. I see absolutely, this is just how my mind works. I see no point at all in going to all of the trouble of writing this book, the time, the mind drain, the mind, you know, dump, whatever you want to call it, put it all on paper, and then have no clue how to do it because I'm like you. I am not producing something substandard. I'll throw it in the trash before I put it out there. So that really stalled me, big time, stalled me to the point of almost stopping me. So having these conversations with you has gotten me back into the point where I'm like, oh, okay, now I know what to do. I know about what it's going to cost me. I know who I should talk to. I know what processes I can handle. I know what processes I darn well better not handle. It's not in my wheelhouse. So now I'm finding that the words are coming out of my brain and into my Word document much easier because I've got that huge weight off of my mind, like, okay, now what do I do with it? Why write it if I don't know what to do with it? And that's just how I function.
Well, and I'm sure there are people listening who feel the exact same way, and, and it wouldn't be unusual for there to be people thinking, oh, my gosh, I felt just like Denise. And so, yes, anything that can help you get words onto paper, because writers write. It's the simplest quote, but it's everywhere. Writers write. So, again, if you're going to self-publish, you do need to switch to the mindset of a publisher. You can't just write from the ego place because you want to be published, because you want to put author next to your name, because you want to have a book to sell. You have to think about what you're giving to the audience, because ultimately your book needs to be a gift to your reader. So whether it's a great novel or it's a great work of nonfiction that's going to help somebody learn something new or guide them in a better direction or help solve a problem or assuage a fear or whatever it is that the goals are of your book. Or if you have a really compelling memoir that's going to, you know, really motivate somebody or inspire somebody. I'm working on one right now that it's coming out in September, and I can't wait because it's such a great book and there's so much buzz around it for the author. I just can't wait. There are wonderful, wonderful stories and books out there waiting to be shared with the world, but they just need to be done the right way. You need to focus on the writing, and you need to just understand the process of self-publishing so that you can manage it well. You can find the right people, and again, that's why we're talking today, because I really want to help you know where to go to find those people, what kinds of things to ask and look for, and what things to steer clear of so that you can feel more confident about the process.
Right.
So hopefully that's how you'll feel better at the end of the show about all of that.
I felt better after the first, second, third. I mean, I went back to going, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
Oh, I
good.
That's
excited. Wonderful.
Well, I had, you know, I'm not a big one for talking myself out of something, but I am logical enough to know when something is just not working for me, so I will shelve it for a while. And I've always had this book, and now really it's going to be a book series, in my head. But I never could really figure out how in the world I was going to do it. I did not want to go, you know, through, I knew I didn't want to go to Random House or one of the big publishers. I just don't have that platform, and I knew that. So I didn't want to write the query letters, and that was just more than I could wrap my tiny little head around. So I did want to go the self-publishing, but I didn't understand the difference between do-it-yourself and self-publishing. So now that that's clear in my head, I'm like, So I've stood back, taken a look at it, and going, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I can do this. I'm so happy.
Yay! Yeah. Well, where do you want to delve in by asking me where you want to start, or do you want me to jump in?
No, you go. You're the expert. You just run with it.
Well, okay. On the last episode, just to recap, we talked a lot about editors. We talked about the difference between developmental editing, which is the full scope editing of structure, and if you're talking about nonfiction, you're looking at achieving the goals of every chapter and consistency and voice and all of those things. We talked about copy editing being a separate entity, which is really focused on mechanics, so punctuation, grammar, spelling, capitalization, all of those things. And there are developmental editors who are also copy editors, but not every one of them is. And a lot of people find this very odd, and I know you were taken aback. You said, but that sounds so strange, because when most people hear the word editor, they think, oh, that's a person who cleans up all the grammar and punctuation, and that's one of those little nerdy people that sits in a cubicle and they just read all the time. And yes, we can be nerdy people who read all the time. But the point is that when you're seeking out editors, you have to understand that there are really two phases, or the two phases get combined into one if the editor does both, like I do, for example, but not every developmental editor does. So the first phase is always developmental editing, always, whether you're doing a novel, a memoir, or nonfiction, because, as I said, that's the overall scope. So that's making sure that the book is put together the right way, in every way. And a lot of people work with a developmental editor to actually develop their material. So sometimes I work with someone, and I'm telling you this because I want you to know if you're stuck on a chapter or you're even stuck two-thirds of the way and you have a vague idea of what you want to do, but you need help. And whether you're a novelist or a nonfiction writer, that can be the case. That a developmental editor will actually help you develop that material and help you get your story or your nonfiction work fleshed out the way it needs to be. And so that's always the first phase. Now, when I'm editing and I'm shaping and doing all those things, I am a total grammar nerd, as all of you know who've listened to me before. So, you know, my mechanical skills are very fine-tuned, and I fix everything as I go. But some people are really just focused and have the greatest skill in developing a book really well, but they don't actually have skills in mechanics. And so you may actually need a developmental editor first and then a separate copy editor. So first I want to just talk about finding editors and what kinds of questions you should be asking and what kinds of things you should be looking out for.
Excellent.
Okay.
And I have to kind of interject here. I was stunned to find out that you possibly needed two editors. I always have this kind of Jackie O picture in my head where she was in her office, she picked up the book, she, you know, red penciled, yellow penciled, and then handed it back off, and it was brilliant. I don't know where I got that idea, but I mean, I think that's kind of a common thing. I think we all think, well, one editor ought to be able to do the whole darn thing, and clearly that is not the case.
It's not always the case, and it's not really that unusual, only because you have to remember that there are very fine skills involved in editing, and for one really important example, if you're talking about fiction, fiction is its own entity, and developing a novel is a very specific skill, and some people are really excellent at seeing story arc and character development and all the things that make a novel work really well, how one chapter intrigues the reader into the next and all those kinds of things, but they simply don't possess the skills of a copy editor because it is a separate skill set. And so it's not necessarily unusual, but it is something that you want to ask. So the number one thing I would tell you is when you start seeking out editors, you want to know what type of editing they do. So if they're a developmental editor and they say so, you want to make sure you ask if they also are copy editors. Because if they're not, they need to be upfront with you so that you know there's going to be a phase two editor and that editor is going to be a separate person. Because then you're going to need to seek out that copy editor as well. And I'm going to give you some great resources for finding editors, so don't worry. But that is a really important first question to ask. But before you even get there, I just want to tell you that the first great way to find an editor is through referrals. So if you know any other writers who have self-published, and self-published well, I think I really need to put that word in there, because as we know, being a self-published author does not necessarily mean self-published author with excellence. They're two very different things. But if someone has self-published and they've worked with a great editor, that's always wonderful. Referrals are always the best. So number one, try to get referrals if you can. But remember that every editor has specialties, just like in any other field. So certain editors are going to maybe specialize in nonfiction or only fiction. And if fiction, maybe only genre fiction, maybe only literary fiction. If they're nonfiction, they may have specialties. Like I, for example, have specialties in language books. I work with a lot of, well, not a lot, but I've worked with professors and people in the field of language because I studied many languages, and that's part of my academic and personal background is language. So that is definitely a specialty for me. You know, I also work really well with books around, you know, leadership and motivation and things like that because that's part of my professional background. And so there are going to be certain types of books that editors have a specialty in, and that is a very, very important question. So once you have some referrals, if you're able to get referrals, that's wonderful. And if you don't have anyone around you who's self-published and you don't know anyone who can give you a referral, you know, you can always look in the backs of books in the acknowledgement section because 9 times out of 10, the editor is going to be thanked, usually profusely, and sometimes not, but usually at least mentioned for all the great work that person has done on the book. So now if they are a big-time New York publisher, they're going to be out of your league, and they may only work for the publishing house. They probably don't freelance. But that's why I'm going to give you some great resources. So first, you want to try to seek out referrals. Once you have some referrals or some names of people who may be freelance editors, either from the websites I'm going to give out or from looking at books, maybe books that were self-published and you happen to know that and they're done really, really well, then that's a great place to look for providers. But then you want to make sure that the editors you're talking to are connected to your material. They've either done books in your genre or they have a particular connection to your genre, but usually having done books in your genre is the best way to go. So
I would think so.
Yes. Yeah, so like Denise, for example, you're working on a series, you said, and then I mm-hmm. imagine, is it genre fiction? Is that your idea?
No.
I don't want to pry too much into your idea.
No. Oh, it's okay. it's about the virtual assistance industry. There's a lot of confusion out there about just what the industry is, just how you get started, how you work with clients, how clients can work with us. It's a big, big industry, and I think it's terribly underserved at this moment about a lot of things. I think that there's just too much misinformation out there and no real how-tos or, you know, kind of instructions. It's going to be a series because there's just so much to cover.
Okay, so you're doing nonfiction and you're looking
nonfiction.
At your particular industry. So
as we
touched on this before, when you mentioned the series, I thought, oh, maybe she's also writing a novel. I thought maybe you had two books in the works, and I didn't know that.
I do that in my sleep. I don't know that I can do it awake, though. Have you ever done that? I have written complete books. I mean, these were massive, you know, books. I mean, they're just like you put them on the coffee table, and the coffee table bows, and I've done them in my sleep. I mean, they're
wow.
Nobel Prize winners in my sleep.
Wow, that's impressive. I cannot say that I've done that, but I'm
impressed. It's fun. You wake up exhausted.
Yes, I imagine so. So what you would want to make sure is that when you're interviewing editors, you want to talk to them about your subject matter, and you want to make sure that it's something that they feel a connection to. Now, let's just say that you're interviewing me, and you say, okay, this is my idea for my book series. This is what I do. Do you have any experience in this field?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, well, I've never been a virtual assistant, but based on what I do as a book production professional and the way that I work individually with clients and that kind of thing, it's maybe similar. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me what you do, and
mm-hmm.
I maybe do kind of the same thing but in a different field, so I certainly understand it, and I have a real appreciation for it, and I love that you want to share this with people because there's a real gap in the market. There's not really a great guidebook out there. So I would personally feel a connection to what you were doing, and you would be able to hopefully hear that in my voice.
Mm-hmm.
You would hear the sincerity. You would know. If you told me that you were writing a book on, you know, some very highly technical subject that was just outside of my realm of knowledge and I really didn't feel connected, I would tell you honestly, and any editor should. So that's something that you really want to think about. Another thing that you want to look at before you even, you know, actually talk to people is to really check out people's websites. And I, as we said before, I mean, sometimes, you know, websites, when we're really busy as business owners, sometimes we don't have as much time to update our own websites as we do to work on other people's projects, and sometimes that is a detriment to us as entrepreneurs. But for the most part, I mean, any provider should give a very good overview of what they offer. So if an editor has a website, and every editor really should, there should be a good breakdown of the kinds of things they offer, what kinds of details or things they're looking for, helping you with, so that you have a good idea before you even try to get on the phone with somebody, so that you can get a feel and you can weed people out. And, you know, a lot of people will say right on their site which areas they specialize in. For example, I have a colleague who only helps writers with genre fiction. That's it. She's a genre fiction gal. Science fiction, fantasy, mystery, that's her thing. And so outside of that is not her thing. And it's not that she doesn't love the genre or the books, but that's just not her area of expertise. So you know that when you go on her website. So if you're a genre fiction novelist, you already know, okay, she's a good candidate for me. And that's connection number one. So again, you also want to look for the different types of skills they're offering. Are they developmental? / content editor, as I mentioned in the last show. Developmental and content are often used interchangeably. They're pretty much the same thing. Content editor a lot of times is reserved for fiction, but plenty of fiction editors say they're developmental editors too. So just to make everybody more confused about editing, there are two interchangeable terms there. Copy editing is also a lot of times called line editing, which is really about the, you know, the nuts and bolts of the book. And then there's also proofreading, which is the very last phase, which we also talked about in episode 3. So they're very distinct types of skills. And some people possess them all. Some people only do one or the other or one or two. So, again, you want to know what the body of work is of the person you're working for so that you know how many different tasks they can actually do for you. And you want to know what kinds of books they've worked on. You know, do they work on complete books like I do, for example, as editor, you know, developmental editor, copy editor, proofreader, or do they just edit and then they recommend a proofreader or, you know, whatever it may be. So those are really important questions, and that's why I'm spending a little bit more time on it, because people get so confused about all the different segments, and they just think editor polishes the words, and then I move on
right.
And I get it designed, and then that's that. So definitely make sure you know all the different services they provide, and if they provide several, then how do the different phases work, and what exactly is provided to you in each of those phases. Also, it's really important to see examples of their work, and also credentials. Now, there are a lot of different kinds of editors in the world, and the thing is, and I think this is what makes it so challenging for people looking to hire editors, is there's everyone from the New York editor who worked for Random House for 20 years, who is now a freelancer. You know, wow, that, you know, that person edited novels for 20 years. You're thinking, that's the perfect editor for my novel. And that may be. And that may be the most expensive editor you find. And if you can afford that, then fantastic. There may be editors who have never worked for a big or a small press, but they've worked as an independent for many years. Or people like me who have been sort of editing and writing all of their lives. I honestly was born with a gift for it, and I say that with much gratitude. I don't say that in an arrogant way, but I was born for a gift for it, like some people pick up a violin and play or sit at a piano and play, and I just always had an ear and a thing for language. And so over time, you know, I've read tons of books and done seminars and gone to workshops and, you know, really honed my skills as a writer and an editor. I don't have an official credential, but I have tons of experience, and I have a real instinct and a real understanding of language, and I feel very, very confident in what I do, and I've done a lot of great work. So, you know, being able to show my work, for example, is very important because I don't have a big house credential behind me, and I don't have an editing certificate, which is kind of usually an extra thing that somebody may earn, you know, can take some time to get that. And then some people are really more magazine editors. They've worked for a magazine, and that's great, but book editing is very different from editing articles and magazines. You know, editing a book is a very big scope project, and so it's something that you want someone to have some experience with, and again, you want to be sure that someone has an understanding of your material so that that full scope project of your book is being handled by someone who really understands what they're doing in terms of a book. So when you're looking for somebody and you're looking for samples, if you don't see any samples on the site or you don't see anything that says samples available upon request or something like that, then when you talk to the person, if the person ends up being a good candidate, you definitely want to ask to see editing samples. So for example, I don't have them right on my website, although I'm kind of considering putting them up just to make it easier for people. But I've always just kind of had a PDF that I send to people, and it has a whole bunch of excerpts from books that I have edited. So, you know, it's not miles and miles long, but it has, you know, 8 or 10 different books in different genres so that people can see the different type of work, the different type of voices I've worked in with different authors to show the level of editing I do. If they don't have any samples, or they say, well, I don't give samples, that's a red flag. You don't want to work with someone who doesn't seem to want to share with you what they've done. Number one, if they say, oh, well, I've worked on all of these books, that's great, and maybe the books are all on the website and everything looks legitimate, but having an actual, some sort of a sample that you can read is really important for you as a writer. The other thing that you really want to do is you want to, usually a seasoned editor is going to have a paid editing sample that they offer. They're not usually going to offer one for free, so don't expect that. If somebody is new to book editing, like when I was starting out, for example, I willingly did samples for free. So I said, if you want to send me your first chapter and I will do, you know, 5 pages, I will do an edit for you, because I was still trying to create a portfolio and build my business. And everybody starts somewhere. So, you know, don't discount somebody because they're brand new, but at the same time, you know, it's hard to take a chance on someone who has no background or no, you know, nothing to really show you. However, if there's some great connection, you just feel it, and I was so blessed to have that happen to me with my first clients. It was just that connection was there, so even though I didn't have a ton of experience in particular doing books, there was a connection, and there was a trust there, and I was willing to give a lot of myself without charging to prove that I was the right person to do the project. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, think about that. You know, what are people willing to offer you? Now, if someone's been the book editor for quite some time, or they come from a New York publisher, or, you know, something like that, of course they're going to charge you for the time to do that sample. But it's important for you to see how the person edits. How do they maintain your voice what are they actually doing with your material? Because one of the things that you mentioned that so many writers worry about is how is this person going to, you know, dice, slice, and chop up my writing, and then it's no longer going to feel like mine. And the truth is some manuscripts really need that. They really need lots of reshaping, or they're never going to be a marketable book, and they're not going to be a good reflection of the author, because sometimes the ideas are there, but the writing really isn't that great. So some writers really need, you know, the strong-handed editor to do a lot of reshaping and reworking. But it still should be a collaboration. You still should be able to, you know, feel comfortable talking to the editor and asking, well, why did you do this? Or what was your thought behind this? So if you pay for a sample, and, for example, if someone wants to pay me for 2 hours of my time, then I will edit as much as I can in that amount of time. Or maybe certain editors will offer for a flat fee the first 5 pages or the first 3 pages. I mean, editors all work differently. So, you know, find out what they offer. And then once you get that sample back, you know, read it and absorb. Read the comments. Read the things that were changed. And really think about what's been improved about your work. If you really don't feel it's been improved, or you just have a weird gut feeling that something is off about it, then that's probably not the best editor for you. At the same time, we have to be really careful as writers, and I'm a writer, so I get this. I really get this, is that we have to put our egos aside. Because when we've written a book, we are in it. Ourselves, our heart, our soul, it's in it. Whether it's a novel, a memoir, a book about leadership, it doesn't matter. We're bringing so much of our personal selves and our experience and things to the table in this book. And so it can feel like a personal assault when an editor, you know, either red pens or, you know, track changes and then a Word document, and you see all these different red things and things crossed out and comments on the side, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what's this person doing to my work? But really, a good editor is going to know what your book needs to be the very best it can be. And so if you feel like the person's just hacking up your work and rewriting it, and it's not really you and it doesn't feel right, then maybe that's not the best person for you. But if there's a lot of changes and you can get past your ego and you can see, oh, my gosh, I do get why this was deleted. I get why this was moved and why this was rewritten. It does sound better now. And sometimes it's really hard to get to that place right away because we get a little injured in the writer's ego. So it's really important to put that aside, because working with a great editor should be a really fortifying experience for you as a writer. It should make you excited. I know when I was working with my fiction editor, I got a lot of wonderful feedback from her, which was so exciting. And then she said, but you should probably delete about 80 pages of your manuscript. And I was absolutely crestfallen. I mean, devastated is probably the better word. And I thought, I don't know if she knows what she's talking about. You know, I have this writer's ego conversation going on in my head as I'm sitting across the table from her smiling, thinking, she can't possibly mean that. She must be exaggerating. You know, she cut my dialogue.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I said, you know, how can she be in love with my dialogue skill and my character development and the whole story arc and all this stuff, and then say I should delete about 80 pages? I thought she was crazy. And I loved this woman, and I had so much respect for her and her background, so I thought, okay, I think maybe I need to reevaluate myself and my ego. So I remember coming home and sitting down, and I'm sharing this because many of the listeners may experience this, and I just want you to know you're not alone. And I thought, okay, fine. I'll look at her notes where she says, get rid of this page, get rid of these 2 pages, and I'll get rid of it, and I'll read it, and I'll see if I think she's right or not. And what I found is slowly I started going, oh, my gosh, she's right. This was really not necessary. I was just overwriting and trying so hard to make the reader see every little thing instead of just letting the reader absorb and imagine, you know, for themselves. And pretty soon I was deleting, and I was so proud of myself, and I was excited about it because I thought, this person has really opened my eyes. She's really helped me see what my book needs to be the very best, how it can be tighter, and how I can stop trying so hard to show the reader, tell the reader, I should say, showing and telling is a big thing in fiction, to just allow the reader to absorb the material without saying so many words. And once I started doing it, I really did start to feel very proud of myself for moving to that next phase. And sometimes it does take some time. I've worked with writers who've been incredibly gracious, and I've done a lot of editing, and they just said, oh, wow, thank you, this is great, you know, and they approve most of my edits. And other times, you know, it's probably a little tough to get to that point. So it just depends on the person. But you need to think about that, you know, when you're looking for an editor. Is it a very heavy-handed, hardcore, not so nice, not so gentle type of person? And is that a good kind of person for you to work with? Or do you need someone a little more nurturing and a little more gentle? But will that person be tough enough on you and help you see what you need? So, again, it's a process, and you don't want to just hire an editor lightly. You do want to interview people. You want to ask questions, and you want to check out all these different things that I'm telling you about so that you can make sure you find the right person. So when someone does an audition, a paid audition, or, you know, a chapter sample or something, again, see how you feel. If you're just reacting viscerally to seeing a bunch of changes and you think, oh, no, that's too many changes, you need to put your ego aside, and you need to step aside from it for a little bit, come back to it in a few days, reread it, and see if it really does feel like, okay, my work is getting better. And then that's always a great sign. Another really important question you want to ask is how they charge, because we as editors all charge differently. Some of us work on hourly rates. Some people work by the word, by the page. And, of course, a page can be, you know, a manuscript page might be 200 words. A book page might be 350 words. So usually in the business, 250 words is what's considered a standard page. So if an editor says she charges by the page, it's typically going to be 250 words per page. So you want to think about that. And also you need to realize that a deep developmental edit is going to cost a lot more than a routine copy edit. So, you know, I know there are developmental editors out there who can charge up to $120 an hour. And that's a big fee, I have to say. That's probably the highest you're going to find. I know my editor, my fiction editor, was $85 an hour, and she, you know, had a lot of experience. I charge $70 an hour for developmental editing. I charge $50 an hour for copy editing. So, you know, you should expect to see a range between the two. And when I'm copy editing while I'm developmental editing, it's all in the $70 an hour. I don't double it or anything weird like that. So, again, know how you're being charged. And if for some reason you're being given a flat, I will edit your entire novel for, you know, $2,000, make sure you know exactly what's going to happen in that $2,000, because you have to be honest with yourself and realize that no professional is going to give you more time than she's really getting compensated for. So, I mean, to a degree. So, you know, if I'm making $70 an hour typically, but I'm giving your book so many hours for a flat rate that I'm now making $25 an hour, that doesn't help me as a business person at all. And, you know, it's really not fair to either party to not be compensated fairly. So you want to make sure that if there is a flat fee, and typically it's because the editor has reviewed the manuscript and has decided, okay, based on the level of editing, based on my experience, this is what it's going to be. But typically hourly rates are usual to find, because we never quite know what we're getting into. You know, a first chapter might sound really good, and subsequent chapters might need a ton more work than the one chapter they gave us, you know, as an example, to think about the manuscript or to do an editing sample. So just make sure that you know exactly what you're getting for the rate you're paying. And if they are charging by the hour, you should be able to have some sort of proposed range for, you know, editing the entire manuscript. So I always give a range, you know, from this amount to this amount is what I propose. And if I get into it and I realize, oh my gosh, the author really didn't give me the best example of how the entire manuscript is written, then I will let the author know as soon as possible that, you know what, it looks like your book is going to need more work than I initially thought, only because I hadn't seen this part of your manuscript. But typically, you know, editors want to see an entire manuscript, and I usually ask for it too. So there are different kinds of scenarios that can happen, but the main thing you want to think about is you should be able to have some sort of range. So if it's not a set fee, you should at least have an idea of what your editing is going to cost. I know I'm just talking. Do you want to interject?
No. I do not want to interrupt the flow of information. You keep going, girl.
Okay. The other really important thing is to look for legitimate testimonials. You know, testimonials go a really long way on a website. And if for some reason they seem generic or they seem, you know, there's no link to the person's website, there's no photo, there's no book cover, if something just feels like, gosh, I wonder if this person made up all their own testimonials and put a bunch of names next to them, you should ask to speak with clients they've worked with. And it's not unusual and it's not rude to do that. I've had a few people say, well, I'd like to speak to clients you've worked with. Would you be willing to provide me with some of your clients' emails and names? And I said, absolutely. First of all, on my testimonials page, you can link directly to any client I've ever worked with who has a website. Most of them, almost without fail, do. But yes, I will happily give you their direct email if you like, and I've given them a list so they could choose. And somebody who says, you know, I don't want to let you talk to anybody, or I don't have any testimonials, or, you know, usually people should have something to show that they've proven themselves in the field. And there's nothing wrong with contacting people, even if you don't tell them you're going to. If you go to a website and you see testimonials and there's a link or there's, you know, some way for you to look that person up, there's nothing wrong with doing that, because you really want to do your due diligence, and you don't want to end up with an editor who really didn't work with all the people she said she did, and testimonials aren't legitimate. So don't be afraid to ask for things that you want and to verify things that you think might need verification if anything seems a little off on the site itself. The other great red flag buster question is if you ask an editor what style guide he uses, and he says, what do you mean, or I don't know, red flag, every editor is going to know what style guide he uses. If you're a book editor, you're using the Chicago Manual of Style. So if someone says CMS, they're meaning Chicago Manual of Style, and that's the standard for books. Now, if someone is a magazine editor, or they're used to working in publishing in a different realm other than books, then they may be used to using the AP style guide, which is Associated Press. Now, they have different style rules than Chicago Manual does. For example, Chicago Manual commands the serial comma, which is the comma that comes before, you know, a preposition or, you know, at the end of a sentence, whereas AP does not. They capitalize differently in the AP. They just have different rules. So when you're looking for a book editor, that person should be using the Chicago Manual of Style. That's the tradition in the book industry. And if someone doesn't know what that is, red flag, definitely move on to the next one. They should also know which edition is current. And by the way, it's 16, just so you can stick that in your notes. Another really important thing for you to know is the process they employ when they work with authors. So some editors are old school red pen to paper. I mean, they might say, I want you to send me your printed manuscript, and I'm going to do all the typical editorial markup in a red pen, and there's going to be notes on the side and post-its and all this stuff all over. And other people are obviously going to work in Word and use track changes and add comments in the margins. So you just want to know how the person works. And is it going to be a style that works well for you? Because that's really the important thing. It's a collaboration between the two of you. And This is your baby you're giving to somebody. You know, this is a big deal to hand your writing over to somebody. And I know it was a huge, vulnerable moment for me. And so, you know, you don't want to hand it over to someone that doesn't feel like a good match for you. So these are all really important questions to ask. You also want to know, are they going to be sending you files through email regularly? Are they going to edit one chapter at a time and give you a chapter to review, and then they're going to move on to the next chapter? Are they going to do the whole manuscript and then see you in a couple months? What's going to happen? And if you feel like you need to be more involved, then hand your manuscript over and get it back in a couple months, which actually can be typical for fiction, so don't be surprised if that is the answer for fiction. But for nonfiction, I know with my authors, I tend to work either, you know, chapter by chapter or a couple chapters at a time, whatever actually makes sense for the particular book. Because I want the author to be shaping the work with me and feeling good about the work as we're building the book together. So for me, that's important because I know it's always been important to the authors I've worked with, and it's worked really, really well for me in my business. But other
See, that
authors
would be my
work
preference.
Differently.
I would be far more comfortable having you work with me instead of me going through the whole thing, handing it to you, and then going, oh, crud, now I have to start kind of from scratch. You know, I didn't know all this in the beginning. I would just, to me, it would make more sense to have you in contact during the process.
Yes, and it works great for me. I'm in contact with my authors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, there may be an author saying, well, I'm still working on a chapter. Maybe the chapter's in the middle of the book, so you get to that chapter and you either skip it, or while they're working on that chapter, you move to cover design. Or, you know, obviously I do that. Not every editor is going to be a cover designer, and that's kind of unusual. But if you're just working with an editor, you should be able to have a nice flow. And there shouldn't be big, big gaps of time between, you know, hearing from an editor and then hearing from her again. So, you know, it's not unfair to ask how many books are you working on at a time. I just had a prospective client I spoke with last week who said, how many books do you work on at a time? How much attention are you going to give to mine? And that was a totally legitimate question. And I told
Absolutely.
Her honestly how many books I usually work on at a time and how I work, that I work in very concentrated segments on one book one day or for 2 days, and then I switch to somebody else's. I might work on a couple books in a day, but, you know, I don't do like a half hour here, a half hour there, a half hour there. I'm spreading myself so thin that I'm never really giving myself well to one person at a time. So don't be afraid to ask that. Don't be afraid to ask anything, really, because again, this is your baby. This is your dream. Your dream is to be a published author with excellence. That is the end goal. You want to have a marketable book you're proud of, that people are buying, that you're sharing, that you're selling at events, whatever you're doing. And so your editor relationship is just absolutely crucial, getting to that end point. Another really important thing that you want to know is how they communicate. If you're a phone person and the editor's not, the editor says, no, I only do email, you know, we're not going to do phone conversations, and you're thinking, oh, that's really weird for me. Sometimes I want to hear the person's voice. I want to talk something out. I want to ask questions while we're both looking at the manuscript on the screen, and I just want to talk it out. And the person says, well, I don't do that. Well, that might work for some people, but it might not work for you. So if that feels weird or doesn't feel like it's going to work for you for the next however many months you're working on the editing, then you probably want to move on to another candidate. And I keep talking about talking on the phone, and I really want to emphasize that, you know, you can email somebody and you can inquire, and, you know, they may have a certain protocol for connecting, or they may want you to fill out a form on their site about your book. They may want to see the manuscript before they even talk to you, that kind of thing. And so everybody has a different way of doing things. But ultimately, don't ever hire somebody without talking on the phone. I mean, the phone is still a viable mode of technology. We don't have to do everything by email and texting, for goodness sake. It's very important to hear voices. And it's important to hear sincerity. It's important to hear enthusiasm. It's important to hear how the person is. Like I said in the third show, you may really want to work with someone who's lighthearted and humorous and kind of fun and friendly, and you talk to the person on the phone and they're dry as a bone, and, you know, they're not very forthcoming. They're just sort of, you know, this is what I do, and yeah, I'll get back to you. And you're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to work with this person. The personalities just don't meld. So as I mentioned before, just like when you're seeking out a life partner, somebody you want to spend, you know, your life with, there are deal breakers, and there are things you'll compromise on and things you shouldn't compromise on for you as a person, for yourself. And it's the same way in an editing relationship. It's kind of an intimate relationship because you're handing over words that you've poured out of your heart onto paper, And now you're trusting someone with those words to polish them well and to develop the content well. And so that your personalities really should match well. And it's hard to know that if you don't have a phone conversation. I mean, somebody is very curt in email, that can be an indication, but not always. You know, some people just aren't good emailers, or they hate writing, they don't like emailing. They prefer to, you know, just do the work that they're hired to do, and then maybe they'll chat with you on the phone and be very warm and helpful. But the important thing is making sure that you have that phone conversation, whether the person requires a paid consult or has a complimentary consult. That's always, I think, the thing that you should do before you make any decisions. And have several people you talk to. Don't just talk to one, but talk to several so that you can, you know, narrow it down, you can eliminate people, you can compare, and you can see where gaps might be with different people and what is a deal breaker and what isn't. The last thing I want to say...
I love that about conversation, and I'm so glad that you stressed that because it's critical. I mean, I have the same thing in the web development arena. I don't make people jump through hoops to talk with me. I need to speak with them and find out because it's like their book, it's their baby, it's their real estate on the web. And it's important to them, and it has to be important to me, or we're not going to be able to work together.
You're right, and what I really want to emphasize is to trust your instinct. You know, that little voice, if that little voice says something's off, or the way this person talks, it sounds, I don't know, or I don't know if the website feels that legitimate, or, you know, something, I feel like something's being held back, or, you know, just listen to the little voice.
Spidey sense. I love it. I work with it all the time, Spidey sense.
Yes, it's very important.
That's my friend. Yeah.
Yes, and for me too. I mean, as an editor and as a book production professional, the conversation with the client is very important to me because for me, life is too short to work with clients who aren't in harmony with me. So if there's a real sense of struggle, a real clash in personality, a clash in goals, a clash in style, then I'm probably just not the best person to work with that author. And that's okay. I'm not going to be perfect for everyone. No editor is going to be perfect for everyone. So it is important to have, as I said, that voice recognition of certain elements that are important to you. If someone says, oh, yeah, I really love mystery. Yeah, I could do that. I've never done it, but yeah, I could do that. And you're thinking, something just doesn't feel totally right. I mean, I'm a very exuberant person, and sometimes I'm a little over the top in my enthusiasm because I love what I do so much. I like jumping up and down for my author sometimes, literally, in my office. And that might be a little more than somebody wants. Some authors may not want a cheerleader in Southern California jumping up and down for their book. But I think the majority of people actually appreciate it because it makes them feel good about the process working with me. But not everybody has that personality. And so, you know, again, trust your instinct and be really sure that it is a good match. And as I look at the time, I see that we are almost out of time and we are still on editing. Oh, dear.
Do we need to do a fifth? Do we need a fifth segment? Because we can.
Well, as long as your audience isn't getting tired of me, I'm happy to come back for episode 5.
No. There's a comment in the chat room that says, I really enjoy listening. Let me start over. I can't read today. I really enjoy listening to Stacy. She is so informative. Thank you, Jane.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wrap up with the last thing I want to tell you and then tell a brief couple of cautionary tales because I think everybody needs to have a really good example to hold on to. And then we'll talk about episode 5. How's that?
Okay. That works for me.
Okay. I had a client last year who had contacted me, and she was very excited about the connection we had, and I was super excited too. And she said, I actually have an editor already, but he keeps invoicing me, and I never see my files, so I don't really know what he's doing. And I said, well, that's very odd. Were there any red flags like that when you interviewed the person? And she said, no. He had a great website. He had great testimonials. We talked on the phone. We had a great rapport. I sent him my manuscript. And, you know, every so often I might see a little bit of work, But what he invoices me for is definitely not the amount of work I'm seeing. And when I ask him to see it, he says, yeah, yeah, I'm still working on it. But yet he was invoicing her for time. And I said, ooh, that's really tough, because initially all the things seemed to be lined up, you know, for harmony. And yet once you started working together, something was a little off. So the reason I'm saying this is sometimes things will feel very aligned, and once you start working together, something might be off. And if that happens, don't be afraid to fire the editor. You should have a contract, number one. Gosh, we haven't even talked about contracts. Episode 6 will be about contracts.
We're going to go as far as you will take this. I'm telling you right now, whatever you've got to offer, I'm here to make that happen. So we will have as many episodes as we need.
You are so great. Well, contracts are very important, but I will just say that. Make sure you have a contract, and make sure there's an exit clause that is fair. So if something goes awry in the partnership, either from the provider side or from your side, you should both be able to get out of it and be fair, and everyone should get paid for work that's been done, and files should be provided. Okay, I'm just going to make that blanket statement. Mm-hmm. But, you know, don't be afraid to fire a provider who's not doing her job or who's invoicing you and you're not seeing the work being done. Again, this is your baby. Don't be afraid. If you have a little bit of a timid personality, you're not used to hiring people, you're not used to working with people one-on-one for whatever reason, maybe you're used to working in a lab or you're used to working all by yourself or whatever it is, and some people just feel very awkward with this. But remember, you're paying somebody good money to do excellent work, and if they're not doing it, then they don't deserve your money and they don't deserve to work on your book, period. So anyway, make sure that when you pay for work, you're seeing the work. I invoice every 2 weeks, and my authors see everything I've done. So when I invoice, they're seeing their files. They're seeing everything that I've done, and there's no question, and I break everything down in the invoice of what I've done. So I try to be as descriptive as possible, and I try to keep track as carefully as possible while I'm working, so that, you know, this was cover, this was interior layout, this was editing, this was, you know, whatever, so that it's very clear. So, again, trust your gut. It's usually right, if not always right. So just be true to yourself, and don't be afraid. One other quick cautionary tale is I also had a client last year who came to me to design her book, but she already had a professional editor. And so she wasn't looking for an editor, but she was looking for a proofreader. So she hired me to lay out the book, do her cover, and do the proofread. When I started doing the proofread, I started finding lots and lots of mistakes, lots of punctuation mistakes, repetition of vocabulary, awkward syntax, things like that. The book was beautifully done, and she's a wonderful writer, but mechanics-wise, she didn't have the best grasp of everything. And she paid an editor $2,000, which was a very competitive rate for the length of her novel. It was quite long. And the person was actually even recommended to her. But she didn't know what questions to ask. And when I finally got it out of her, she said, well, the person was an editor for poetry. Well, poetry is a whole different animal from a book, you know, a full-length book, a full-length memoir.
Yeah.
So, you know, how much can you really edit a poet? You know, a poet has a lot of creative license. So, you know, you may place a comma here or there that you think is appropriate, but, you know, in poetry you can kind of do a lot of different things. So, you know, cautionary tale is that she paid this person $2,000 to copy edit her book, which she thought was a fair amount for the number of words and all the work that was done. But she didn't herself know exactly what mechanics were correct and what wasn't. So she didn't know that there were so many mistakes, and I literally found hundreds of mistakes.
Oh, no.
Yes, and it broke my heart. So this is why I'm telling you to. I'm not telling you this to scare you, because I don't want to scare anybody, but I want to scare you just enough so that you know what to look for, because I don't want this to happen to anybody listening to this show. I don't want you paying somebody who's not right for you, and I certainly don't want you, you know, paying for work that isn't being done or ignoring your gut or not knowing what to ask. So if you've been frantically taking notes and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I can't read some of my notes or I didn't get everything she said, you can certainly re-listen to the episode. I mean, that's wonderful. But I also want to point you to the blog post, which actually has a little ad floating by if you're live. If you come back and you're listening to the recording, then what you want to do is just go to bit.ly, so it's just that shortened little bit.ly, bit.ly/ red flags to heed. So bit.ly/ and then all one word, red flags to heed. And that will take you to the blog post that has all these questions I've been talking about, things you should be looking for, and the cautionary tales as well. And then since we didn't get to talk about looking for designers, I guess that will
and
be episode 5
right.
And contract.
Right.
So, yes, next time we will talk about it. Listen,
excellent.
I do want to – do I have time to just throw out a few websites? And then
yes,
when I come
do.
Back, I will reiterate them.
Yeah. In fact, I was going to ask you before we ended the show to tell people where they can find you on the web. So perfect.
Well, before you find me, which I would love for you to find me, but before you look for me, I want you to look for a great editor. And if that's me, then wonderful. I'm thrilled if you want to come to me as an editor. But I also want to give you some great resources. One is the Editorial Freelancers Association. And that is a membership site where a lot of freelance editors reside. And they have robust profiles, and it's a great place for you to go. I don't believe you have to be a member to find people, but you do have to be a member to list yourself. So Editorial Freelancers Association, and it's the, THE-EF, as in freelancers, A.org, the-EFA.org. That's a good one. Also, there's bookworks.com, so that's just bookworks, one word, .com. Also, check out shewritespress.com. They're actually a partnership publisher, and their editors work for the publishing company or the publishing, the press, but they're all freelancers. In fact, I'm one of them. So you may find somebody there in the, I think it's in the editorial staff section of the website at shewritespress.com. That you may feel really connected to based on what that editor does. There's also Consulting Editors Alliance, Consulting Editors Alliance, and that's at consulting-editors.com. I think I'm going to add these to the do and don't list or something. I need to have these in writing for people. So I'm going to update
I think that would be a
that
great
do
idea.
And don't. I'm going to update that for you, and
okay.
These will be there, and there'll be live links, and it'll make it easy. There's
you.
Also BiblioCrunch, which is a place where you can host a project, and there are lots of providers there who can bid on your project based on your budget and your needs. So BiblioCrunch.com is another one. So anyway,
like
I will
Elance,
add
huh?
those. Yes, it's like Elance, and Elance
okay.
is another one. BiblioCrunch is just for book providers. So it's kind of nice that it's narrowed down just
mm-hmm.
to books.
Okay.
So I wanted to toss those out there because I promised and I didn't want to not fulfill a promise. Now, if you do want to find me, I'm at thebookdoctorisin.com. That's thebookdoctorisin.com. And I have all kinds of stuff on my site that you can read about me. And if you want to access my blog, as Denise mentioned in the beginning, it's theselfpublishingscoop.com. And I also have a chock full of secrets video, the top 10 things you must know to be a self-published author with excellence, at SavvyAuthorMastery.com. Again, that's Savvy, S-A-V-V-Y, AuthorMastery.com, and you can get that if you'd like. But you can get the Master Do and Do's and Don'ts list of self-publishing, which is chock full of resources, right here at yourpartnerinradio.com. But I'm going to update it for you, so don't download it yet. I'm going to update it today so that you have
okay.
some good references on it.
That
right, sounds strange, I know, but...
Well, you know, that's the beauty of what we do. We can spin on a dime and go, oh, hang on, I've got more stuff for you. Let me correct that. And I'll go back
yeah.
into all of the episodes and update it. And it's also on my blog as well, denisegriffiths.com. So as soon as
oh,
you get that to me,
you.
I'll just update it all over the place.
Oh, thank you so much. I definitely want to give as many good resources. I'll put the designer resources on there too, even though we haven't talked about them yet. those will be on there as well.
Excellent, excellent. Stacey, I love chatting with you, and I can't even begin to tell you how much I appreciate you going to so much effort to just share so freely your knowledge of the industry. And I love that you're not trying to sell anything. I mean, you are actually telling people, look, I might be really, really good for you, but I may not be. So here are some resources. That is just so gracious of you, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. It's my pleasure. And honestly, what's important to me is that you as a writer see your dream come true, and you put a book into the marketplace that is excellent, that is going to help people, inspire people, entertain people, whatever your goal is. I mean, you're going to be really proud of it. So however I can help you get there, that's what I care about doing, and that's why I love coming back here, especially because I love, love, love chatting with you more than anybody, because you have such a great perspective, too, as a writer and as a prospective self-publishing writer. So I know the audience really appreciates you and your perspective as well, because they already love you so much, and so it's great for you to be able to talk to them about your own experience. But it's my pleasure, and I'm so excited that the series hasn't ended. As I said, I hope the audience is okay having me back again.
Oh, well, listen, when you asked me, I have to go back to the chat room here. When you asked me, do you want to ask any questions, or should I just go, and instantly in the chat room says, let her rip. I just started laughing. They did not want me interrupting you, none. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's so sweet. Well, I can't thank you enough for allowing me to be on your wonderful show, and you're just so gracious, and I'm very happy to be able to help as much as I can.
Well, and we need to talk, too, because during this series, I've already made the decision that you're going to be working on my book, so let's just get it out there in public.
Wow.
You're hired.
Wow, what an honor. Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. What a wonderful opportunity for me for a harmonious partnership. I already adore you.
Well, and the thing is that we work, our work style is so similar. You're working, you know, in book editing. I'm working, you know, in valuable real estate, web development and virtual assistants and online business management. And everything that you're talking about, the things that you do for your clients, I do with mine. So, I mean, we already have that great synergy right there. And even though you don't know much about the virtual assistants industry, you work almost exactly the same way I do. So right there, that's all I need to hear.
Well, and I'll tell you, one of the joys of my work, and possibly for you as well, is how much we get to learn from our clients. You know, I learn new things from all the books I do. I get so excited about different insights and perspectives, and there's just been so many things I've learned and internalized that have been a gift to me, and I'm sure that happens for you, too, when you're building someone's site, helping them launch a business or a product. You're thinking, wow, this is so cool. So that's very exciting. Well, thank you for making such a glious announcement on the air. I'm honored.
Well, I'm looking forward to working. Now I feel like I know where to go with my book now. Before, I was like, oh, geez. You know, there was always that kind of gut-wrenching that you go, I can do this. Oh, geez, I don't think I can do this.
And now, after
listening to the series and really getting to know how you work, I'm like, well, that just worked itself out. Woohoo! Moving forward.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Well, I'm looking forward to working with you. Well, Stacey, thank you. I mean, you are just an amazing source of information for people who really do want to get their words out onto paper and into the hands of people who can benefit from it. So I really genuinely appreciate you taking the time to get on the radio with me all these times. And I have to tell you, this morning my brain was fried, so thank you for writing the intro, which I never ask guests to do, but I'm like, you know what, she can do it better than I can. Here you go.
It's quite all right. I'm happy to oblige, and thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Well, and it's just been a lot of fun, but more than that, I think people have learned so much from it, and they will continue to. So we will definitely set up episode 5, and if we have to go into 6, 7, and 8, we will do what it takes to get this information out. We're going to stop it when it comes to a natural conclusion and not before.
Okay. Well, I am in. I am definitely in and very excited about it.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being here with us today. The show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Stacey Aronson, and do be sure to go back and listen to the other episodes. They are chock-a-block full of information. Contact Stacey if you have any questions. Contact me if you have any questions. we're easy to find. We're all over the internet. You can't throw a stick without hitting either one of us. Just look for us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. We are out there. So everybody have a great weekend. Stacy, thank you. And I will see everybody next week.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.